Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen, number 98. Cover date, December 1966. Cover price, 12 cents. Cover artists, Kurt Swan and George Klein. Edited by Mort Weisinger. Featuring The Four Clocks of Doom, written by Otto Binder, art by Pete Costanza. And The Bride of Jungle Jimmy, written by Leo Dorfman, art by Pete Costanza. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go, go! Costumed villain calling himself Tempest claims to have a clock that predicts when disasters will occur. With his final prediction, Tempest foretells of Earth's destruction in a similar fashion to Krypton's. Meanwhile, Jimmy Olsen and Clark Kent visit the jungle, where a movie is being filmed on location. The local natives worship a female gorilla named Bruna. When Bruna sees Jimmy, she falls in love and tries to take Jimmy as a mate. Confused? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
Abba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba-dabba means monk, I love but you. Abba-dabba-dabbin' monkey talk means chimp, I love you too. Then the big baboon one night in June, he married them and very soon they went upon their abba-dabba honeymoon.
What are you doing with yourself? You're all glistening and muscly.
Hey there, Mr. Man. I just got finished exercising.
Did you?
Yes, I ran a fast 2 mile run. Fastest I've run since I had my surgery on my foot.
What's fast in your world?
I'm embarrassed to say because.
Why?
Because there are listeners here who absolutely can run faster than I can.
Well, there's a listener across the table from you who cannot run, period. So,
well,
go on.
So I did, let's see, I did 2 miles and let's see, activities. I'm trying to see my, oh, here we go. I did 2 miles and my pace was 11:22. That's not super, super fast, but it's fast for me because my average pace has been 12 and a half minutes per mile. So I shaved a minute per mile off of my pace today.
Plus you got a bum foot.
Well, yeah, I need to go have something done to my foot. And then I came home and lifted weights.
Wow.
So I am getting this weight off. I feel great.
I am too, but I choose to just eat like a bird rather than exercise all the time.
I thought you were doing the chair yoga and whatnot.
I'm doing that too, and then everyone makes fun of me because I'm doing it in a chair. It's
well,
the
I
same.
Just,
it's also exercise if you're in a chair.
I just revealed my mild pace, which
yes.
I know there's at least one listener going, God, that great big lummox is dragging his sad old fat 53-year-old carcass or on the road at that pace. Yes, I am. It's there. Anyway, what a day. I love living where we live. I love it.
It's like, what's happened? What?
I went to the Food Lion after work and ran into...
That's a local grocery store, everyone.
Ran into like six people that I knew. Talk to them, which was why I was a little bit later than I wanted to be, because
mm-hmm.
I just caught up with so many people. It was just lovely. It was just great. I just like, hi, Rob. Oh, hi. Oh, hi. Oh, how are you? Oh, yeah, I see you brought your dog into the grocery store. I don't know why
sure.
you did that, but, you know, just like, got all this great catching up. And it's because we live in a small town.
Well,
it's nice.
You are a prominent citizen of the community, so
well,
you're bound to be recognized everywhere you go. Even I've been recognized as your... Esposo.
And I will say that sometimes it's not good. Sometimes you just want to go in there and, like, you know, get in and out.
Sure.
But, and so best times to do that are going in the morning.
Yeah.
That's the secret, everyone. Yeah. If you go to the grocery store, the minute it opens, nobody is there. They're not stocking like they are every other minute of the day.
And not only was I navigating talking to all the people that I saw, I mean, I literally saw seven people that I knew and talked to four or five of them.
Yes.
The other ones I just waved at, you know. But then they're all stocking the shelves and they're moving their giant carts and stuff like that around. It's not as bad as it is at Martin's, where you've got to dodge that floor cleaning
robot. The robot, yes.
Right?
Marty the robot.
I hate that robot.
I was never employed for a grocery chain as you were in your youth. Mm-hmm. Why are they stocking the shelves at 5 p.m. when everyone is going to the grocery?
They stock the shelves all day. Plus, there are other vendors there, too. So not only do Food Lion employees stock the shelves, but I don't understand this, but certain companies have their own vendors that
stock
the shelves. Like
the chips guys.
The chips, the soda, the beer, the bread.
Pepsi Cola. Joan Crawford comes in and stocks the shelves personally.
But that's it, if I remember correctly. Beer, bread, chips, so snacks, and sodas. Paper products and all that sort of stuff are not stocked. None of the detergents, none of the household things, and none of the grocery items like canned goods and all those other things. None of the frozen foods, they're all done by staff. So
yeah.
It must have something to do with the system that we have set up. So.
I don't know. And yet I went in there the other day, and what do you think they had none of on the shelf?
Coke Zero.
No.
What?
Broccoli.
Oh, you're kidding.
Of
my
all the
vegetables.
I know. And of all the vegetables to have, like, that should be the first thing that you have on the shelf.
I don't know. I mean, they're pretty busy. When I go in there, the vegetable people are, the produce people are stocking the shelves, you know? I don't understand why.
Yes.
When you go to the produce aisle.
Yes.
And you see those vine-ripe and red tomatoes.
Yeah.
They look so red and so ridiculously ripe and fresh that if I look at them and I go, I have to buy these right now or they're not going to be good tomorrow. Like,
right.
They're perfect, right? You bring them home and put them in the natural sunlight.
Yeah.
They're not as brilliant. They're not as deep a red. And I don't understand. There must be a sort of setting filter on the lighting in produce that enhances the color of the fruit.
Yeah, it's like Emerald City in the original novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. Emerald City was not made of emeralds. They just made everyone put green spectacles on when they entered the city gates, and that made everything look green.
Oh.
It was all a sham.
Ah.
Speaking of tomatoes.
Yes.
I was thinking of this the other day.
Yes.
When I was in college, the first time, I went on a school trip to Israel, mm-hmm. which was engineered by my roommate as a joke, but all the literature went to my home address, of course, the home address on file, uh-huh. and my grandmother saw the mailings, and she said, oh, if he wants to go to Israel, I'll pay for it. So off I went to Israel.
I never had a grandmother like that.
Well, no, you didn't have Mrs. White. She mm-hmm. was a social butterfly and a fairy princess. Mm. Anyway... it was so hot and awful and muggy and humid and dry and all of anything that exists where it's 100,000 degrees uh-huh. in the daytime. So one day we were out on some kind of excursion and they gave us a sack lunch, which consisted of some kind of pita sandwich,
okay.
a canned cucumber,
ew.
Like a little individual can
of
cucumber and cucumber water.
Ew.
And a little fresh tomato. And it's 40 years later, I still think of that tomato. It was so refreshing and juicy. And
really?
The most wonderful thing to eat in the hot day.
I didn't think the story was going to end like that.
No.
I thought you were going to say, and then I bit into it and it was rotten.
No, it was most wonderful.
Screw this, Israel. I'm so tired of it.
It's the most wonderful tomato I've ever eaten. And I grew up in Ohio where they grow good tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
They used to, not anymore, since the current administration took over. Anyway.
Well, here we are.
Who is Superman's pal?
Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen, number 98, featuring the Bride of Jungle Jimmy. As you know, in the 60s, it was decided that comics sold better if you had a gorilla or an ape on the cover.
Mm.
So here we have Jimmy. Getting married to a gorilla or an ape. What's the difference? One is a One is
Isn't ape like the family of apes?
Well, apes and monkeys are different things, but yes. Some things are like chimpanzees, are monkeys.
Okay.
And gorillas are apes.
What about orangutans?
I don't know. That's why I'm being non-committal.
Well, let's
because
move
I've
on.
Been scolded in the past. I don't need to name names at this time.
All right.
Superman's dressed as a witch doctor, and Lucy Lane's there in her safari gear. She's an air hostess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy's putting a ring around the gorilla's finger, who's wearing a bridal veil. How did that happen?
If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
I put a golden band on the right left hand this time, and the right left hand put a golden band on mine. I was also thinking of that song today. I have a lot of thoughts going through my head working from home.
I'm all jacked up on workout juice.
Apparently.
I had one of those Celsius drinks on the way home.
What's that?
It is a low carb, vitamin E kind of like pre-workout get jacked up on caffeine. I don't know what it is. Oh my God, I hope it doesn't interfere with my sleep tonight.
It will, 100%.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I had the fastest run I've had in years. Okay, so first story. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. How would you like it? How would you like to get glimpses of the future?
I'd love it.
Yeah. You could if you owned that the weird clocks possessed by that sinister seer, Tempus, whose uncanny prediction spells disaster for Metropolis. In fact, Tempus's terrible timepieces finally foretell a fearful fate for the whole world.
Nice alliteration.
Can anyone prevent the fulfillment of this frightening prophecy of
the four clocks of doom? At the TV station WMET-TV one day, Jimmy Olsen takes a turn as a panelist on a quiz show. I love old game shows.
I know you
do. I wish
do.
This was What's My Line.
Our trivia show this week presents Jimmy Olsen, expert on Superman. Studio guests may try to stump Mr. Olsen with any question about the Man of Steel. Raise your hand if you want to ask him something.
Oh.
Yes.
What was the biggest monster Superman ever tackled?
That's an easy one. It was a colossal, mineral-eating space beast, so huge that Superman had to use his powers to keep it from devouring an inhabited planet.
The queries fly thick and fast, but Jimmy answers each one.
How fast has Superman flown around the world?
In 1/5000th of a second. But he wasn't going to... I'm sorry, that isn't Jimmy's voice. In 1/5000th of a second. But he wasn't going at top speed.
What's the range of Superman's telescopic vision?
It's unlimited. He can keep an eye on happenings in far-off parts of the universe.
How does Superman clean his indestructible uniform?
By flying into the sun and letting the flames of the old soul burn away the dirt and dust.
At last, the young reporter faces a man in a weird-looking outfit.
Holy cow, who's this costumed kook?
I am Tempus, an expert on time. At what exact moment of the day, Metropolis time, did Superman's homeworld Krypton explode years ago?
Simple. According to my knowledge of Krypton's history, it blew up at exactly 6:57 a.m.
6:57 a.m.? That's rough. Most of the population would not have been awake at that time.
Right.
I just want to scroll back to the first panel where we have the game show set up.
What's that next week, Columbus?
Next week, Columbus. Next week, Christopher Columbus is coming to be on the game show. Next week,
time machine?
Columbus.
Yeah, is he holding up a sign or is he just?
It's behind Jimmy.
Yeah,
no,
what does it mean? But it wasn't up there. To see the next panel. It's not up there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't know what to say about it, so I just sort of let it go.
Oh well, you know, I have to question these things. After the show, when Jimmy calls upon Mr. Tempus at his home, Mr. Tempus, we should mention, is wearing a purple bodysuit with blue tights and loose shorts of some kind.
Kind of like
a diaper.
Jerkin or a diaper.
Mm-hmm. A blue cloak with a high collar. The cloak has pictures of clocks and watches and things on it. And a purple Robin Hood kind of hat.
It's a very obvious outfit.
It's a look.
It's a look.
Yeah.
He's committed to it.
Yes? I have timepieces from all over the world. water clocks, hourglasses, sundials, wooden clocks, every kind devised by man since ancient times.
Wow, I never realized there were so many ways to tell time.
Yes, he's got a water clock, which is 300 years old, an Alfred candle, which marks time by burning between the numbers, a battery hourglass which marks quarter hours, and here's the first pocket watch, a tiny sundial from 300 BC.
Gosh, is that a clock too?
Yes, the platform revolves and the figures move. That's a, you know, one of those turny things with the guys with hammers and things.
With the sign on it that says to repair.
Yes, it needs to be repaired. Mm. Also, there's a giant jack-in-the-box clock.
Did I ever tell you my secret wish?
No.
I don't think I ever have I?
You have told me many secret wishes, intimate moments, but go on. Why don't you?
Because I'm 53. Who's going to start repairing clocks at 53?
Grandma Moses started painting when she was 85 years old or something like that. Mm. It's never too late to start. All you have to do is start. The journey of 1,000 miles is begun by one step, my friend.
Yes. Okay. So there's this giant box in the
room. A giant box. It's got a clock on each face of the square. Apparently, it's the Four Clocks of Doom, made by a medieval sorcerer. It can predict disasters at the four corners of the earth, and indeed, the sides are marked south, east, and we presume north and west on the sides that we can't see.
Jimmy says, superstitious bunk.
You think so, Olson? Then be in Metropolis Square at 5 p.m. tomorrow. The doom clocks will prophesy catastrophe in the city.
So, always on the lookout for a story, Jimmy is there in the town square the next day, the town square Metropolis.
Yes, and here comes Tempest. Here comes Tempest. Rolling down the street in the doom...
Inside the clock, in the yes. doom clock.
It's got wheels.
Looks like a Fisher-Price
That's toy. What I was going to say. It's got the little Fisher-Price plastic wheels.
Plastic like wheels on it, yeah.
The pulley dog.
Yeah. How's he steering the damn thing?
We don't know.
Because both hands are just, like, one hand's gesturing and one yes. hand is holding onto the box.
It's moving as if by magic, Jimmy says, or thinks, in his head. The powers of darkness will cause the hands of the East Clock of Doom to stop at the precise time of day when an historical disaster occurred. See? At 8:38 today, a similar disaster will strike in Metropolis.
But what kind of disaster, Tempest? You haven't told us what the other one was.
That is for you to figure out, Jimmy Olsen, if you can.
Powers of darkness. Prophecy baloney. Nothing's going to happen. I'll take in the farmer's fair while I wait for the fatal hour.
So, Jimmy, off to the farmer's fair, he goes into the famous farm animals of history exhibit.
The reenactment of... He's going to see a historic exhibit of... It says October 8th, 1871, Mrs. Yep. O'Leary's cow kicks over a kerosene lamp starting the Chicago fire. That is a myth.
Indeed, it is.
Mm-hmm. At that time, all the buildings were made of wood.
Yes.
It was very common for things to catch fire. The Chicago fire got way out of hand.
It did. Now, I always heard this story and thought Mrs. O'Leary's cow was at a barn out in the middle of a field somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. No. This is like when we lived over in Sharpsburg and we had the barn right behind our house right. in the tiny city.
Right.
And indeed, the O'Leary's barn was the first structure to catch fire.
Yes.
But reporter Michael Ahern published a claim that the fire had started when a cow kicked over a lantern while it was being milked. Not true. Mrs. O'Leary was in bed when the fire started.
Okay.
So in the reporter's story, the owner of the cow was not named, but Catherine O'Leary soon was identified because the fire had begun in her family's barn. However, in 1893, Ahern finally admitted he had made the story up. And why? Because Mrs. O'Leary was an Irish immigrant, and the Irish were terribly put upon in those days.
I had a thought on Sunday morning at church. So uh-huh. Sunday was St. Patrick's Day and the fifth Sunday of Lent for the Papists. For Christians.
It was the fifth Sunday of Lent for us,
so
too.
So we had a service that incorporated Irish tunes, into the worship service, right?
Did you sing that one song? Jesus and Mary and Joseph.
So I was just thinking for a moment. I was looking at the music and preparing, you know, preparing here at home. And then I went to church and was preparing there. And I was like, you know what? I wonder if I'll ever live to the day when we have a holiday that celebrates Hispanic people, that celebrates a Hispanic saint with such fervor and reverence as we do. And I mean, when I say fervor and reverence, like it's both a sacred and a secular holiday when it falls on a Sunday. It's right. Mostly a secular celebration, which minimalizes the contributions of the people of Ireland. But it was literally started, St. Patrick's Day was started here in America.
Yeah. They don't do it in Ireland.
No. And so I just wonder if, like, we will ever have a day, probably not in our lives, in later history, when the marginalized, oppressed, demonized Latin American populations will have their own equivalent of St. Patrick's Day. And at that point, it'll probably be people from Africa that are immigrants that'll be the demonized sort of, you know, group of people. Like, I just wish that... I'm doing a lot of my own research on the importance of immigration right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me so angry that people are so against immigrants. It is such an important generator of so many wonderful things for every country that embraces immigrants.
Yeah.
And it's just, so I was just thinking about this weekend, how like Irish were once just demonized as idiots, as it's all the worst things of the population. And then in the early 1900s, I think it was 1927 or 1924, they started enacting laws to keep immigrants from Eastern Europe from flooding in because they were seen as less. And then so all of a sudden the Irish were elevated into a place of prominence and other people were targeted. And just like it's just sort of it's cyclical or it changes. They just give a different focus.
Sure, sure.
We need immigrants. We need them. As a matter of fact, if you come to America as an immigrant and you work, you pay into Social Security, and if you're not an American citizen, you can't draw on it. It only feeds into the American populace. It only benefits American citizens.
You're preaching to the choir, brother.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So you're looking for a holiday that is not celebrated in the country that it is celebrating?
Well, I don't know. Like, I celebrate personally. Yeah. I celebrate Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
I have always, like, put pictures of my relatives around and light candles because I just think it's an important day. It's something that I've adopted personally. But
you mean something that Americans have adopted that made it meaningless?
Oh my God, you're going to say Cinco de Mayo.
Yes, of course.
Oh my God, how could that have escaped me?
I don't know.
Mexican Independence Day. That's the
first thing I thought of.
I feel so stupid.
No, it's fine.
Will you edit all that out?
I sure will. No, I won't. I'm too lazy.
Okay.
I'm lazy because I'm Irish. So, are we going to have a giant fire in Metropolis? We sure are, because Jimmy goes outside the fair and... There's a mechanical cow,
I guess, that just constantly kicks the same bucket over and over again on the top of the building.
But whoops, its leg pops off. This reminds me of going to the Ohio State Fair when my father was I don't know what his job was, but he drove around the fair in a golf cart all day, and that was our summer treat. Go to the fair with Dad and ride around in the golf cart and meet all of the Uncle Sam on stilts and cattle people, because he talked to everyone.
Do you remember?
Anyway, they had a butter cow at the Ohio State Fair.
So I was just thinking about this cow with a leg that kicks the bucket over and over again.
Yeah.
The Copper Tone billboards where the dog would grab
the diaper.
Little girl. Was it a girl's diaper or something? Or her, and then it would pull it down and there would be tan lines?
It was, I believe that was Jodie Foster was the model for that, or maybe that was Ivory Snowbox.
I don't know.
Anyway, the cow's leg pops off and lands on the truck full of gasoline
explosives.
And starts a fire. And instead of blowing the fire out when he's summoned by Jimmy's signal watch, Superman just cracks open the street, dives underground, breaks the water main.
puts the fire out.
Puts
with water,
the fire out,
which is not how you should put out a gasoline fire.
No,
because water, because gasoline floats on top of water, so it spreads. But that's what Superman does. Then he repairs it.
He should have flown out to the Metropolis baking soda factory, gotten a giant vat of baking soda, poured that on top of the fire.
Or he could have created he could have twirled his arms and created a whirlwind.
He could have used his Justice League signal device and called the Flash, who
could
come,
twirl his arms and create a cyclone and, yes, and whirl the flames into a cyclone and shoot it off into the air.
Into space, right? Yes. Well, anyway, Superman repairs everything, and then, holy smoke, Jimmy realizes that Mrs. O'Leary's cow started the Chicago fire at 8:38 p.m., the exact time Tempest predicted a similar catastrophe in Metropolis.
Superman says, well, if this Tempest makes any more prophecies, just let me know, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't visit Tempest at his home where Jimmy's already been to interrogate him. The next day, or later that same day, I don't know what time it is. Time is meaningless now. Tempest calls Jimmy to announce that tomorrow at 4:30, the doom clocks will again make a prediction of peril.
Here we go.
And the next day in Metropolis Square, there he comes down the street in his Fisher-Price doom clock.
His cape and cart.
Around and around the hands go and stop at 5:13. In less than 1 hour, another past disaster will be reenacted in Metropolis.
So Jimmy, being a good cub reporter,
yes,
runs to the library where you would go and look up things before the computer.
Before the computer,
he runs to the library to look up to find out what historic calamities happened at that time.
More that I love that the library has an entire labeled historical disasters section.
I just noticed that. I didn't notice that before. I just thought he was just looking into books, historical books.
My God, if the Grandview Heights Public Library had had that when I was growing up, I never would have gone anywhere else.
He says, this is it. Clocks don't distinguish between AM and PM. What? I guess it's true.
It's true.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. But how could a quake hit Metropolis? There's no geological imbalance between this city comparable to the San Andreas Fault in California. But amazingly, the next moment...
Well, yes, but we forgot to what he's discovered is that at 5:13, that's when the San Francisco earthquake happened.
Yes.
On April 18th, 1906, starting at 5:13 a.m.
You do have an eye for detail.
Yes. But amazingly, the next moment, yay! Impossible or not, the quake just struck.
So Superman, who was taking a tea break,
yes,
now has to go around and save the world. I mean, by that, save Metropolis.
Sure. The city is falling apart, quaking apart. Spotting the fault with his X-ray vision, Superman bores down under the earth and discovers that what used to be solid rock underneath Metropolis has now become soft and sandy.
How?
I don't know. But this is like Superman the movie, isn't it? He dives underground and just stitches the earth back up with rock and freeze breath and
laser,
stones, laser
heat vision and all sorts of stuff.
And then
he seals up the earth.
Just zips up the cracks with his heat vision and a little super rischer. And
then he starts to fix the buildings.
Rebuilds all the crumbled buildings.
When he built that hospital?
Yes.
In one afternoon.
And then remember when evil Superboy destroyed the elementary school and he had to rebuild
it. Just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So Jimmy is alarmed, right? Because this guy is predicting calamities.
Yeah.
And here he comes the next day. And here he comes down the street again at his Fisher-Price doom clock. And the South Clock of Doom shows the time for another disaster of the past to be duplicated in Metropolis.
Jimmy thinks, I'll check at the library again. But as the minutes tick by rapidly, floods, hurricanes, falling meteorites, I've looked up every kind of disaster I can think of, but with no luck. I'll signal Superman.
Z. So, Tempest has predicted another disaster at 2:31, but Jimmy cannot match any past calamity with that time. Good thing Superman has super memory, because he's going to run through all facts of all history with his super memory.
Flipping through the rotofile.
Got it. On July 28th, 1945, a U.S. Army B-25 bomber smashed into the Empire State Building in New York City at exactly 9:51 a.m. Where did the 9:51 a.m.? Because Jimmy just said 2:31.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a misprint. Anyway, That's actually true. On July 28th, 1945, a bomber did crash into the Empire State Building.
Huh.
951. And get this. Wow. It was flying in thick fog. The crash killed 14 people, which was 3 crewmen and 11 people in the building, and an estimated 24 others were injured. Listen to this. Elevator operator Betty Lou Oliver was thrown from her elevator car on the 80th floor and suffered severe burns. First aid workers placed her on another elevator car to transport her to the ground floor, but the cables supporting that elevator had been damaged in the incident, and it fell 75 stories, ending up in the basement. Oliver survived the fall.
No, she did not.
Due to the softening cushion of air created by the falling elevator car within the elevator shaft. However, she had suffered a broken pelvis, back, and neck when rescuers found her amongst the rubble. This remains the world record for the longest survived elevator fall.
The front door.
That just made me remember a Superman story. It was a Mr. and Mrs. Superman story, so it was on Earth 2, where Lois Lane and Lana Lang were in an elevator, and it started to plummet to the ground. And Lana ordered Lois to just start jumping up and down in the hopes that when the elevator crashed, they would be mid-jump, so they wouldn't. That wouldn't work, Lana.
I don't think so.
No. Anyway, it just so happens that at that moment, an Air Force plane heading straight for the Everest building there in Metropolis at supersonic speed, the pilots lost control. Superman yanks open the cockpit,
tosses out,
grabs the pilot, and throws him into the air with no parachute.
But you flung me out, and I have no parachute!
Yeah! Seizing the controls, the Man of Steel takes over because the sharp turn he's about to execute would snap the neck of anyone else.
Well, why didn't the guy who was piloting the plane do that?
Because it would snap his neck.
Oh, he lost control in a downdraft. Okay.
He just misses the edge of the Everest building. Then he makes the plane make a big loop and catch the pilot. Swoop under the falling pilot, he'll land right in the cockpit and can take over the controls. The end. Not really.
Well, unable to sleep that night, Jimmy calls on his girl, Lucy Lane, in the wee hours.
The wee small hours of the morning, when your girl's not on a stewardess flight. That's too much for coincidence, Jimmy says. 3 disasters repeated in 3 days. I'm going to visit Tempest's digs tonight and try to solve the mystery, and so I'm going to take you with me.
She goes, how exciting. Thanks for asking me to join you, Jimmy.
Later, finding an unlatched window, Jimmy and Lucy creep into Tempest's, I don't know what room this would be, his lanai, or it's full of clocks.
Suddenly,
I was expecting you, Olsen. I knew you would be suspicious. As you may have guessed, my doom clocks do not just predict disasters, they cause them through ancient sorcery. I created these disasters as a mere prelude to my ultimate revenge on Superman. Perhaps you wonder why I hate him? I'll tell you.
Backstory, flashback.
Years ago, the Clock Collectors Club unveiled a special clock in their tower.
For your many scholarly discoveries about the history of clockmaking, Tempest, we award you the Tempest Clock, run by a delicate new electronic movement.
How appropriate is that message urging me on to greater things? I'm highly honored.
It's a clock with his stupid face on it.
And it says
Onward Tempest.
Yeah. But at that moment, Superman was on patrol hunting for a notorious criminal gang, and he uses his X-ray vision to spy on normal American families in their Metropolis apartment blocks.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
And among the places he searched with his X-ray beams was the new clock tower.
He's no hideout there, just a modernistic clock.
Moments later, after Superman had moved on, the clock's hand suddenly began spinning wildly, and my clock! My wonderful clock! The whole mechanism is bursting apart!
Some electrical disturbance must have caused a short circuit.
Later, he witnessed the capture of the gang Superman had been hunting, and he vowed revenge.
You did something else, Superman. You wrecked my clock. But I'll get even with you.
As Tempest's tale of super hate ends...
I'm sure if he had just made Superman aware of the error, Superman would have fixed the clock.
Totally.
In like a second.
Mm-hmm. Instead, he devoted his entire life to revenge.
It's like Lex Luthor. He went bald. Became a criminal genius.
So he says he stumbled on the four clocks of doom and their legend of sorcery. He's going to bring about the fourth disaster with the North Clock. He'll merely set the hands to coincide with the time of disaster that he chooses.
6:57, why, that's the time Krypton exploded!
Right, Olsen. Why do you think I asked you that question on the TV show?
Precisely at 6:57, my doom clock will duplicate Krypton's fate on Earth. This planet will blow up. Superman will be quote-unquote orphaned.
Holy cats! He intends to wipe out everyone on Earth, including himself. I'll call Superman. Zeep,
zeep, zeep, zeep.
Here goes the ultrasonic signal from my watch. Soupy had better make this scene quick to stop the blast.
Nope, no answer. Luckily, Jimmy has rigged his signal watch on his own. With the press of a button, a sleep pellet zips out of his watch and knocks Tempest out, who, with his last breath, says, "I'll die, but it will be worth it to get revenge."
Quick, Lucy, help me turn the North Clock's minute hand away from the final moment.
Oof, we can't budget, Jimmy.
We know Tempest manipulated the hands from inside this thing. I'll find out how he did it. Whew, no use some strange forces that controls locked in place. Probably nothing can move them until after 6:57, and then by then the clock will be blown up and everything else on Earth. Ah, only seconds to go, and then our whole world will be blasted and kingdom come, and us with it. Superman's invulnerable, still survive, but nothing else will remain.
So Jimmy has an
image. How is Jimmy even alive? I would have a heart attack by now if I was Jimmy.
Jimmy's got an image in his head of the Earth exploding.
All of the continents that are above the
continents
oceans
remain in shape.
Shape as they're blown into outer space. There's America and South America. There's Australia.
Superman is flying away saying, "No, no, Lois, Jimmy, Batman. All my friends, everything I knew and loved on Earth wiped out." Groan.
I hear this loud noise coming in. Vroom.
Oh, Jimmy, that loud noise. Hold me close before the end. Earth is beginning to explode, and I've never been with a man. Choke.
It takes the destruction of the whole Earth to get you into my arms. Well, so long, Lucy.
Not a kiss? Nothing? So long, Lucy.
And then... nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
Can all these clocks be fast? Oh no, Tempest is coming too. And he doesn't have another sleeping pellet of gas.
No.
Watch.
Tempest has concealed a machine gun inside a grandfather clock that's set to fire when he pulls the chain weights.
He pulls the chain weights like in
I'm serving you hot lead, my guests.
But a red and blue form flashes in the window.
Tat-a-tat-a-tat.
Sorry, I answered your signal so late, Jimmy. I was busy rounding up gangs of bank bandits.
Superman, I love to see the way bullets bounce from him, especially now. Only, Superman, I've never been with a man.
And I haven't been kissed either.
One bullet ricocheted and struck the starting lever of my revolving figure clock.
The figure clock that needs repair.
But it needed to be repaired because it spins too fast.
So one of the figures throws a spear right at Tempest. Superman catches it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it throws another one throws a hammer.
Into the doom clock.
The doom clock.
My doom clock.
It's destroyed.
It's destroyed also.
Good riddance, Superman says.
And then Max goes into the wall and knocks down a cuckoo clock, which falls on Tempest's head.
Nice gag. When the police arrive...
By the way, Jimmy, that sound you heard at 6:57 was a sonic boom. I flew here so fast I broke the sound barrier.
But why didn't the doom clock work like the other three and blow up the Earth?
Because you gave Tempest the wrong number on the TV show, Jimmy. 6:57 was the right moment. But in Krypton time.
Holy cow, I forgot to convert it to Metropolis time. Everyone knows Krypton time is plus 6 GMT. What a dunce! You stumped me, Tempest.
Listener, I have a problem.
What?
I use Mac at work, and I have my iPad, and I have my phone.
Yes, you know your Apple phone audience.
And if I set an appointment on my phone, it shows up in all of my devices at the right time. But if I open that appointment at my work calendar, even though it appears in the right time because I have time zone, you know, whatever time zone override on,
mm-hmm.
it comes up as having been set in some place in Europe. So when I want to alter the time, it's hours and hours off, but only for events that I started on my iPhone. I've checked all of them. They're all set to New York time. I don't understand it.
What app are you using at your work?
Microsoft Outlook for Mac. That's so that it will communicate with, because almost most people at work use PCs.
Yeah.
And so that's probably why it's only in that device.
There's something somewhere has set your time zone and you just haven't found it yet.
I'm sure, because I devoted 15 minutes of my time today to try to solve that because I had to move an appointment around and I couldn't figure it out. So I ended up deleting the appointment from my phone and then just resetting it on my computer and it was fine. But
you think that's bad? I have a meeting on my Microsoft Teams,
mm-hmm.
which is every Monday through Friday
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Right.
Well, something happened with February Leap Day because now all of the meetings that are Monday through Friday now show as Tuesday through Saturday. And even though on my Outlook calendar, it shows as Monday, but it doesn't appear on my Teams calendar. It's a nightmare.
It sounds like a nightmare.
I just have to remember in my head that I have a meeting.
Oh my God.
Because I don't look at Outlook. That's for babies.
So we're going to do the next story, right?
Sure we are. The Bride of Jungle Jimmy. Have you ever dreamed of going native? I have.
Jesus. I hate that phrase.
Ever imagined yourself in a leopard skin swinging from tree to tree, a lord of the jungle? Yes, sure. Well, that's what happens to Jimmy Olsen. And what's more, our rugged reporter even gets to marry a jungle goddess. Is she a beautiful brunette, a ravishing redhead, a blonde bombshell? You'll swoon when you meet
the bride of Jungle Jimmy. I was just thinking of this. Have you ever imagined of going native? I was just thinking of that. Do you remember Bad Idea Jeans from SNL? And all I can remember is Kevin Nealon saying, well, I'm only going to be in Haiti once in my life. Why not have unprotected sex?
Well, that's not as great as this caption box. One day, as Jimmy Olsen and Clark Kent journey through the African jungles.
Why are they there?
I don't know. We do find out, actually. We do know.
I'm sorry.
Why are they there not walking under their own speed, but being carried
by natives? Yes.
Suddenly, Jimmy spots some tribesmen trying to make a shish kebab out of a white man. We must do something, even though we've invaded their land. Take it easy, Jimmy, Clark says. It's a scene with Rick Barton, star of the jungle epic that Metro Movies is filming here. We're to cover the background story for the Daily Planet.
Stop.
What?
Why would Clark and Jimmy fly all the way to Africa and Jimmy discovers only after he sees natives throwing spears at a white man?
Yes.
Only then is it revealed that they're actually there to cover a story. That is so stupid. The authors could have just written, Clark and Jimmy are on, you know, covering us filming of a movie in the jungles of Africa, and used those two panels at the bottom of the page for something else. Are readers that stupid that they're actually going to believe on that first page that someone is being, that Clark and Jimmy just happen to be, it doesn't even say why they're being carried by natives in the jungle.
I prefer to think that Jimmy was aware of this information and he's just so stupid and reactive that he saw someone being chased by natives that he panicked.
Why would he be friends with Superman? Why would Superman be really close friends with someone that stupid?
That's a psychological subject that we don't have time to cover right now.
Your father would say that's the something to your son. Would he say that's the something? That's the
answer. No, that's Peachy Purnell.
Oh, Peachy Purnell.
Peachy Purnell, that's the answer to your solution. I looked up an IMDb page for Rick Barton, and there's no such person except that Mark Singer, the actor, did play a character named Rick Barton on an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say Fantasy Island.
And Mark Singer famously played the Beastmaster, which kind of ties into our jungle theme, even though the Beastmaster took place in a desert, didn't it? With Tanya Roberts
and Mark Singer. I just remember what he looked like, which was fantastic. Yeah.
Jimmy goes to interview the director, who is 100% committed to his role because he's wearing a smoking jacket, a beret, sunglasses, and a cigarette in a holder.
In the jungles of Africa.
He explains that he has a trunk full of cheap costume jewelry because the natives consider American money worthless. They want to be paid with trinkets. And another surprise Jimmy discovers is that part of the deal with the natives is they let us shoot our film here and we show them a jungle movie every night. They are currently showing
King Kong
featuring Miss Fay Wray.
God.
Jimmy views the stock of the old movies that are being prepared to be shown to the natives. And he says, hey, here's one of my favorites, Sinister Safari. I did a bit part in it with Superman.
And it was a bomb. The studios lost a pile on it. But we're showing it to the tribesmen next week. Could Jimmy not have taken the film out of the canister, instead just read the label on the canister?
Listen.
What?
I think we've established that Jimmy's an idiot.
Okay.
Jimmy that night sees all the natives bowing down to something. What gives? And they are showing King Kong, and out of the jungle comes a female gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
Bruna, the sacred ape. That's why the natives are all bowing down.
And she's their deity.
Yes.
They worship her.
Jimmy thinks that's a gas. What a zany floor show. Those ignorant villagers worship a gorilla. Ha!
And then apparently these villagers understand English.
Oh, sure they do.
Beware, redheaded one. It is unlucky to laugh at our goddess.
Oh, me laugh? Why, some of my best friends are gorillas.
As the movie continues, that sacred ape is almost human. That scene where King Kong falls in love with Fay Wray has Bruna's heart melting.
I forgot to look up. They mentioned Fay Wray's name about a billion times. I wonder if this is like the first time King Kong was shown on television around 1966, or if Fay Wray was in a movie around 1966.
Mm.
I'll look that up at the back end and never talk about it again.
That's all I like about you.
Here comes Jimmy marching up the director the next day. Von Spitz, I've done considerable acting in films. How about giving me a small role? I promise not to steal any scenes from the star, Rick Barton.
Okay, Olsen, it's a deal. But as Jimmy turns away, one of the guys says to the director.
A grip. I bet he's a grip.
He's a grip. An acting job for that ham? Boss, he could set the movie industry back 20 years.
True, but remember the thousands of Jimmy Olsen fan clubs all over the world. Who'll want to see their leader? That means box office.
Jimmy Olsen fan clubs all over the world. He's referencing fans from the comic world.
No, oh no, Jimmy in the comics continuity has fan clubs.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Because he's friends with Superman?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I presume, or it's certainly not because he's an ace reporter.
No. So, however, the remark
yes,
is
Yes, Jimmy overhears.
Oh, poor Jimmy.
Now, Jimmy, Clark says, don't do anything rash. Remember, you're here as a reporter, not as a movie star.
But wounded pride is stronger than mere appeals to reason.
That's what Mother Robinson always said.
Jimmy buys a leopard skin from a native.
Okay, nobody wants to see that freckled shoulder swinging through the jungle, but go on, Jimmy.
Look at me!
He's swinging through the jungle in a leopard loincloth. No, what do you call that when it's got a shoulder strap? A toga?
I don't know.
Sort of thing?
It's a leopard skin.
You know what I'm talking about, listener.
Yeah, he's made himself in a, I don't know.
He's swinging on a vine. He builds himself a treehouse.
He's got all the time in the world for this.
Yeah.
He's there to do some reporting, right?
With Clark. Where's his camera?
He's in a leopard outfit, acting like Tarzan, climbing up, building.
He builds a tree house. He's trying to gather water for his tree house, and instead of just going to water's edge, he's swings balancing on a branch, which breaks, and he falls into the water.
Into
quicksand!
Yay! We haven't had quicksand in so long! I'm so excited!
The pool covers a patch of quicksand. He's really sunk because now he's stuck. He jams the bucket over his head to trap the air inside so he can breathe until he can press his signal watch to summon Superman.
But it's underwater.
It's underwater. It doesn't work.
This should work, though. It should work underwater.
You would think.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of air. He feels someone grab him and pull him up from the quicksand. Is it Superman? No. It's
Bruna.
Bruna. The gorilla girl.
Irk, she says. Then we get little,
Jimmy's appearance arouses Bruna's sentimental memories of the King Kong movie.
He says, look what you, let's not lose our heads. Come on, Bruna. So then.
Runk.
They are, overseen or observed rather by the villagers.
Yes.
The sacred ape has chosen her. Mate at last. Sorry. Chosen her mate at last. Not chosen her. Mate at last.
Uck, 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 uck.
He screams, help, help. Soon in the gorilla's cave dwelling.
No, Bruna, you can't bribe me with bananas. Take those ugly lips away. It's that King Kong routine she saw on the screen. She's imitating Kong when he fell in love with Fay Wray.
So she lives in a cave, right? And they have, there are sort of bedding, I don't know, leaves
straw
or whatever, straw
stuff,
leaves.
Yeah.
Like that. Does she have a corner that she poops in, do you think? Or do you think she flings it over the edge?
Yeah, I think she just crouches down, shits over the edge.
Okay.
That's what I would do. Thank heavens there are some jungle vines and Jimmy can escape and get back to the native village.
Here he hears drums.
Yes, what's going on? Why the drums, Clark says. It's the chosen one of our sacred ape. He has run away. Bruna will be angry. We must capture him for her.
Then Bruna comes in.
Crashing through the jungle.
And...
Clark realizes, finally, that something strange is happening.
This has gone too far.
So he ducks out, changes to Superman, comes flying in, and flies Bruna away from the village.
Mm-hmm.
These natives have never heard of Superman because they're astounded that he can fly and has the strength of an elephant herd. He must be the greatest witch doctor in the jungle. That's a key point we need to remember.
I told the witch doctor. I saw the witch doctor. He told me what to say. I saw the witch doctor. He da 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 da. And then the witch doctor da 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 da. And he said ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang. Wada wada bing bang. Ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang. Wada wada bing bang.
Okay. Superman returns to the village where he is told in no uncertain terms it is evil luck to tamper with the sacred Bruna, O mighty one. Already drums bring the bad news. Drum talks say sacred gorilla make big trouble at crossroads. So Bruna's at the crossroads where there are jeeps. There's a Confederate soldier on a horse.
What? Oh, there is.
There are migrants with camels with packs on them.
Oh, there's a Confederate.
There's an old-timey car there. Everyone is at the crossroads.
Oh, my God.
This is probably the Silk Road or something.
Hmm.
Bruna's right in the middle. She's stopped all the traffic, and there's nothing to do. Superman says, Bruna is considered sacred. If I took her away, there'd be a native uprising.
There's only one thing we can do, Jimmy.
You have to marry Bruna.
He said, just go along for the gag until she adores you.
The village celebrates the betrothal. Superman brings a basket of fruit in offering for your jungle bride, Jimmy. To top it all, Jimmy gets a visitor, airline stewardess Lucy Lane.
Hi, I just happened to be in Africa.
What kind of plane that would require a flight attendant is landing at a big enough airport that is close to a remote jungle where people have never heard of Superman?
Yeah.
Where is that plane?
And again, why were they brought in on litters attended by, carried by natives
and
when this road was nearby?
And how did she get here? Because the crossroads is blocked by Bruna. Nobody can get through, not even camels.
Did a child write this story?
No. but it's written for children.
Okay.
Is what's the difference between a story written by a child?
That's what you're trying to say.
And hey, Jimmy, who's your hairy friend and what's with the Jungle Man get up?
Lucy, would you believe, after Jimmy tells this fantastic story.
Sob, I thought I'd be your bride someday. Sigh. But I'll be a good sport and make Bruna a bridal veil out of mosquito netting and jungle flowers.
He says, stop taking it so seriously.
Look at her face. She's in agony she holds aloft this beautiful bridal veil she's crafted.
He's been chasing her. She hasn't been chasing him, has she?
No. She's only interested in him when she gets jealous.
Yes, yes. She's only interested in super... Boy, no, no, that's not right. Who's she interested in?
Superman. Everybody is.
Okay.
Then even more ironically...
Oh my God, Superman comes in dressed as a witch doctor.
Oh, Jimmy, the native witch doctor is sick. Since I have seemingly magic powers, quote unquote, the chief asked me to fill in and perform the marriage.
Grown, married to a gorilla by my best pal.
Honestly, I'm surprised Superman is not already legally certified to perform marriages. You would think.
And so...
So, the director's there filming the whole thing. He promised Jimmy a part. This will be a great scene.
By the laws of the tribe, when the water boils in this cauldron, you will be wed. Ah, the steam rises. I pronounce you man and wife. You may rub noses with the bride.
What a revolting development.
Merk, 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 merk.
That night in Bruna's cave.
Oh, it's their honeymoon night.
She's eating bananas seductively. Honeymooning with a gorilla, and all because my bride saw a King Kong movie. I'll go ape if I don't get away from her. Say, I just got an inspiration.
What? So I guess next they spent day, the night
next
together.
Next day they spent the night together.
Next day when Superman drops in on the... happy couple.
Psst, Superman, I have an idea for a quickie divorce from Bruna, but I need your help. I want you to patrol the base of this cliff tonight.
Sorry, Jimmy, no fault divorce is against the law.
That evening.
Why did Jimmy want me to watch this cliff tonight? I'll use my telescopic vision and check, and great Krypton, Bruna's hurling him over the brink.
As the Man of Steel swoops into the rescue.
Jimmy, what's this all about? I thought that gorilla loved you. Why did she dump you?
Because our romance is through. It's all part of that quickie divorce I arranged.
It was the King Kong movie that inspired Bruna's romantic feelings for me, but I recalled another film in Von Spitz's stockpile. So after sundown, I remembered that when I acted in that turkey, an angry gorilla hurled me over a cliff in my one scene. Naturally, when I projected that scene for Bruna later...
Gave her ideas, didn't it?
Monkey see, monkey do.
Beauty is as beauty does, as Mother Robinson would say.
She's throwing me over, just as that gorilla did in the movie. So ends our marriage, and me too, if Superman doesn't catch me, which he does.
Back to Metropolis now, before that sacred ape has a change of heart.
Well, how did they get to Africa in the first place to do this work that they were going to do if Superman didn't fly him down? And if Superman flew him all the way from Metropolis to Africa, to the jungles of Africa, why was Jimmy not aware of what their purpose was there?
Well, Superman couldn't have flown them to Africa because Clark was there. They had to have taken the Daily Planet copter or
jet. Well, isn't Jimmy worried about what happened to Clark this entire time?
Apparently not. Superman will have some explanation like Clark went to find help in civilization and I'll come back and get him later. Or he's going to fly back on the Metro Express. Metropolis to Nairobi. Direct flight, no stops.
This is the wackiest thing. This is like a Jerry Lewis comic.
I just hope we can get Von Spitz to kill that wedding scene. That kind of movie publicity I can do without.
Laugh track.
Well, I actually like this story a lot.
You would. This is right up your alley.
I'll say.
I mean, I will laugh at a lot of things, but this is ridiculous.
I didn't say I was laughing. I said I liked the story.
Okay.
Anything else to add?
No, that was fun. That was fun. A lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
I'll say. You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts from. And you can find us right back here next week with another story and uproarious tales of our exercise and neighbors.
Indeed.
Bye.